Production support for Earth Eats comes from Charles Schwab and Company Incorporated, whose local branch is now located at 1155 College Mall Road. Independent branch leader Jeremy Zeichner, CFP, and team offer personalized financial plans matched to investors' goals. More at schwab.com/Bloomington. And insurance agent Dan Williamson of Bill Resch Insurance, offering comprehensive auto, business, and home coverage in affiliation with Pekin Insurance. Beyond the expected. More at 812-336-6838. From WFIU in Bloomington, Indiana, I'm Kate Young. Welcome to Earth Eats.
I mean, science is trial and error, and, you know, the scientists and engineers will tell you, you know, the failures are just as important as the successes, because it tells, you know, now you know what not to do.
On this week's show, we dive into the food science archives at North Carolina State and uncover some strange experiments. Atomic peanuts, anyone? Jackie B. Howard shares a recipe for a colorful rice bowl featuring meatballs and Moroccan flavors. And Harvest Public Media takes a look at the struggles farmers face when it comes to health insurance. That's all coming up in the next half hour on Earth Eats, so stay with us. When farmers were asked in a recent survey to identify the biggest threat to their livelihoods, they didn't say low commodity prices or global trade policies. It was rising health insurance costs. That has prompted Farm Bureau organizations in the Midwest to jump into the marketplace with low-cost coverage options. But as Jim McLean reports for Harvest Public Media, the plans have consumer advocates and traditional insurers crying foul.
Rising health insurance costs are a big problem for Kansas farmer Tim Franklin. Between 2015 and last year, he says, they roughly doubled, going from $10,000 to $19,000. And they're still going up.
In 2019, we'll be paying just under $24,000 just in premiums for our family of five.
Franklin grows corn and wheat on a fourth-generation farm near Goodland. He recently took a day off to drive hundreds of miles to the State House in Topeka to testify for a Kansas Farm Bureau bill that he believes would give some relief to farming and ranching families.
Please give us options to do the best that we can to provide for our families and our communities.
Kansas Farm Bureau President Terry Holdren says the legislation the organization is pushing would help thousands of Tim Franklins.
Our members report that on average, they spend 30 to 40% of their annual income obtaining health coverage for their families. Those are significant costs, and they're larger for most folks than their average mortgage payment on their home.
The Farm Bureau can reduce those costs, Holdren says, by selling health coverage that's exempt from state and federal rules, meaning it wouldn't have to cover people with pre-existing conditions or all the services that traditional insurers must cover, such as mental health and maternity care.
This legislation or the authority would give us the ability to say no to folks if they don't meet our underwriting standards.
The Kansas plans would be similar to those offered for years by the Tennessee Farm Bureau and to those recently okayed by Iowa lawmakers. Holdren claims the Kansas Farm Bureau coverage would be 30% cheaper than what's available in the Affordable Care Act marketplace, but cheaper for only some, says former Kansas Insurance Commissioner Sandy Prager, a Republican who says policymakers should fix the ACA instead of undermining it.
The only people that benefit from chipping away at Obamacare are younger, healthier people.
Taking them out of the general insurance marketplace, Prager says, forces costs up for everyone else. And she says even those healthy enough to get a Farm Bureau plan would be at risk because they couldn't turn to state insurance regulators with complaints about their coverage.
Farm Bureau can say whatever they want about what's going to be in the plan. Nobody knows. Nobody has seen them. And even if you saw the plan today, it could change tomorrow and nobody would have the regulatory oversight.
Some Kansas lawmakers have similar concerns. Senator Mary Ware is a Democrat from Wichita.
We're being asked to write this one company a blank check. We're being asked to endorse this plan without knowing what's in it.
Opponents say the Nebraska Farm Bureau has a better model. It's partnering with Medica, a Minnesota-based health insurance company. The cost of its coverage can vary depending on a person's health, says Medica's Noah Tabor, but it's available to all.
The health plan is a guarantee issue. meaning it cannot deny applicants for pre-existing conditions.
Opposition from insurance companies and a coalition of health groups was no match for the Farm Bureau, which used its lobbying clout to get the bill through the Kansas legislature. That's what Sarah Schmidt was hoping for, because, she says, the cost of health coverage is one of the biggest threats to the farm near Junction City that she and her husband Jim are desperately trying to hang on to.
This has been one of our greatest struggles, not only financially, but emotionally as well. We've come back to our fifth-generation family farm, and we would like to continue there.
The Farm Bureau bill is now on Democratic Governor Laura Kelly's desk. She hasn't yet taken a public position, but opponents of the measure are urging her to veto it. For Harvest Public Media, I'm Jim McLean.
Harvest Public Media reports on our food system from the heartland. Find more from this reporter collective at harvestpublicmedia.org. Universities are synonymous with research, experimentation, tinkering, failures, and successes. At North Carolina State University, a hub of agriculture and food science research and product development, archivists collect and preserve some of the most interesting details in food history. Producer Josephine McRobbie brings us this story from the campus in Raleigh, North Carolina.
Right now, to the right, you can see we've got peanut plants, and from there we've got cotton, soybeans, wheat.
The Brickyard at North Carolina State University is a little different from your typical college quad. Though, to be fair, it is Agricultural Awareness Week. Savannah Starnes, a senior majoring in agricultural science, is walking me through the exhibits of baby chicks and crop samples as the trailers of cows, goats, and pigs leave for the day.
But we do this every spring in hopes to kind of bring the barnyard to the brickyard and educate, you know, students that don't come from agricultural backgrounds about agriculture, for them to, you know, find out where their food comes from, find out where their clothing comes from, and things like that.
So what does this university have to do with where our foods come from? And what hits and misses have happened along the way? NC State has a long and varied history of agricultural and food research, with programs in everything from poultry science to feed mill management to sustainable food systems. I'm here at NC State to meet with archivist Todd Kosmarek and Virginia Ferris. They've assembled two long tables full of archival goodies related to food and agricultural science.
We've got photographs, we've got press releases, we've got scrapbooks.
Are there any preserved foods in the archive?
No. That's a great question, though.
The Special Collections Research Center works with units all over campus to identify and preserve historically valuable records and documents.
Agriculture is part of the reason why the university was established in 1887 to provide a place of higher education where North Carolinians could learn the latest kind of farming techniques that were being researched and developed.
The North Carolina Cooperative Extension Service was established in 1914, and around the same time, Jane McKimmon was hired to lead a statewide home demonstration program. These home demonstration projects aim to provide services to rural women and girls throughout the state.
This whole folder is material from a handbook or a binder of materials that a home demonstration agent would have used, teaching them especially things like canning, which was a new technology at the time, a very emerging technology that was mostly used by kind of companies that were producing food for a growing market. But this was putting that technology in the hands of young women in rural communities who were learning through Jane McKimmon's program how to grow their own food, how to preserve that food, and then also how to market and sell that food for their own profit and for their families.
The goal of agriculture and extension at NC State was to use science to improve lives.
The university, the land grant, is here doing all of this research, creating new tools, creating new breeds of plants that then come back to each of the counties in the state through extension.
And in the process of developing new methods for creating and distributing foods, NC State researchers started to come up with some pretty unusual stuff. Dr. Maurice Hoover began at NC State in the 1950s, around the same time food science was becoming an established field of study. His ultimate goal was to create a food processing industry in North Carolina, and food dehydration was his process of choice. The archival record describes his experimentations with vegan-friendly sounding treats, peanut cheese, sweet potato chips, fruit pellets, and something called a soy anti-log.
You know, that's a picture of him, and he's holding in one hand a jar of the pellets, and he's holding in another hand a jar of the full-size fruit. They're just like little round things. They don't look like strawberry, and it's black and white photography, so it doesn't have the color to it that we could tell, you know, that it would have come from a strawberry.
I asked Todd about some of the less appetizing ideas.
Oh, Dr. Hoover freeze-dried seafood. Yeah.
Do you know what seafood?
Yes. Shrimp. African lobster tails. I did run across a clipping where it said, if you've ever had a shrimp cocktail, you probably had, you know, that the shrimp in that cocktail was probably freeze-dried.
Another big figure was Dr. Walton Gregory, a crop scientist who created something called the atomic peanut.
So he wanted to just induce genetic variation to see what kinds of things would come out of that might be useful. And so he exposed some peanut seed to X-rays, which messed up the genetics of it, and then planted those seed peanuts to see what happened. It sounds like in most of the cases, it created some weird-looking plants that didn't really survive very well.
They were damaged cytologically and physiologically, and they had some very bizarre and distorted forms of plant life in the
But it did yield some viable crops, and Lady Bird Johnson is said to have tried an atomic peanut when she visited NC State in 1963. Dr. Gregory was, shockingly, part of a larger trend of experimenting with this kind of technology in the 1950s and 60s. There was even a national group called the Atomic Gardening Society. Eventually, Dr. Gregory came to realize that the publicity the product brought in was more substantial than its usefulness, and he and others moved on to other methods of plant breeding.
I mean, science is trial and error, and, you know, the scientists and engineers will tell you, you know, the failures are just as important as the successes, because it tells, you know, now you know what not to do.
And through these unusual experimentations, we see a through thread of pretty grounded work.
So looking back at mid-20th century, you know, can be amusing or sometimes frightening about what people came up with, but you know, at the time, they thought they were improving people's lives.
Thanks to producer Josephine McRobbie for that story. Check out our website for links and a photo of the atomic peanut from the North Carolina State University's Food Science Archive. You can find that at eartheats.org. And I hope you'll join us on Twitter, where we share all sorts of stories and conversations about food history, food policy, food justice, farm workers, and yes, even recipes. Find us on Twitter at EarthEats. Production support comes from Elizabeth Rue, enrolled agent providing customized financial services for individuals, businesses, and disabled adults, including tax planning, bill paying, and estate services. More at personalfinancialservices.net. Bill Brown at Griffey Creek Studio, architectural design and consulting for residential, commercial, and community projects. Sustainable, energy positive, and resilient design for a rapidly changing world. Bill at griffeycreek.studio. And Charles Schwab & Company, Incorporated, whose local branch is now located at 1155 College Mall Road. Independent branch leader Jeremy Zeichner, CFP, and team offer personalized financial plans matched to investors' goals. More at schwab.com/Bloomington. Jackie B. Howard is with us today, and as she's known to do, Jackie is meal prepping. In other words, she's preparing meals ahead of time for the week ahead, or for the freezer, Today, Jackie's putting together a cauliflower rice bowl, where you substitute cauliflower for rice, featuring gingered turkey meatballs, a bright orange harissa-inspired sauce, crispy oven-roasted chickpeas, and more. Jackie is going all out for this bowl, but she reminds us that bowls don't have to be complicated.
Has a lot of different components to it. I'm going to talk you through all of them. You don't have to use all of them. The best thing about a bowl is you can make it whatever you want it to be and use the things that you have. I am going to start with the ground turkey meatballs. I've got 2 pounds of ground turkey. I'm working with 2 pounds because I'm going to freeze some of these meatballs and use them for other things. They're going to be ginger. It'll be ginger and garlic and salt and pepper, and that'll be the base. So then it can take any sort of sauce sort of in those similar flavor profiles. Gives you a lot of versatility, but still gives them a good amount of flavor. So I've got the 2 pounds of turkey, 1 egg, and then I'm going to do about 1/4 cup of almond flour. I'm going to add 2 tablespoons of ginger puree and 1 tablespoon of garlic puree. So I'm mixing these together. I'm going to add 2 teaspoons of salt and 1 teaspoon of pepper. Now this is not something that we're going to taste as we go. So this we're going to do on smell. It smells, the ginger is really coming up out of it, so I feel confident about that. And the other thing that's going to be fine about these meatballs, as long as they are seasoned well enough with the salt and the ginger, they're getting sauce and other things added to them. It's going to get extra flavor to it. It doesn't need to be all the way in. And then there are a few ways that you can cook these. You could pan fry them. I'm going to bake them. I'm going to cover these in sauce. If I weren't going to cover them in sauce, I would want to pan fry them so I can get that nice brown, you know, beautiful caramelized look to it. Since I'm going to put these in sauce, I'm not as worried about getting that look from it. And if I bake them, then I can have my pan free for sauteing the cauliflower rice. Much more efficient in your time, especially when, you know, it's 2 pounds of turkey. It's a lot of meatballs. Trying to pan fry those, I'd be here all day trying to do that. So I'm going to take them, and I've got a sheet pan covered in foil. I'm rolling these into about a 1 inch to a 1.5 inch ball. My oven is at 400 degrees. I've got them all lined up on the pan. Throwing this in the oven, they'll take about 20 minutes. The turkey is going to cook faster than beef would, so keep that in mind. It's a leaner meat, so it's going to cook up faster. I will check them around 15 minutes and then see if they actually take up to that 20. So then while those are in the oven, we're going to go ahead and saute the cauliflower rice. For that, I am doing 1 tablespoon of coconut oil. You can hear that pan, it's hot and ready. So you can make cauliflower rice. It's really easy to do. You just take that cauliflower and put it into your food processor and break it up and, you know, dice it up into little tiny pieces. You can get it prepared at the store. You can get it fresh prepared in the produce section or frozen as well. This cauliflower rice is actually a mix of cauliflower, carrot, and broccoli. I like the mix sometimes for, you know, to add some extra color and fun. I'm just sauteing this straight as it is right now, 4 cups of cauliflower rice. And then I'm gonna add salt, about 1 teaspoon, maybe 1.5 teaspoons, 1 teaspoon of pepper, 1 tablespoon of turmeric. I'm keeping it moving in the pan. This is something I don't want to just set and forget, because I want the consistency of the cauliflower rice. I want it to cook pretty evenly. I'm trying to mimic the rice and how that might feel. I'm going to slightly undercook it because as it sits here, it's going to continue to cook a little bit. So I'm just doing this. It was, maybe 3 or 4 minutes, and I'm pulling it off and I'm going to let it sit off the heat. And I'm going to add pomegranate. So I got a pomegranate and I've had it soaking in some water. I cut it into quarters, have it soaking in some water so that it'll help loosen up the seeds out of it. And then I'm just going to toss the seeds right into this. I'm making some crunchy chickpeas to go on top of my bowl. So I've taken a can of chickpeas, put it onto a foil lined sheet pan. I want to dry them out at a lower temperature and let them sit for a while on their own. Then I'm going to add the oil and seasoning, and I want that to bake onto the outside. I'm going to do it at a slightly higher temperature. I'm going to move that up to, so it was at 375 for the half hour. Now I'm going to move it up to 400 and just do it for 10 minutes. It's going to finish that, make it crunchy, and get that seasoning set on the outside. They're so versatile, and they're a nice, fun snack. Like, this is something you could bake and have around. So I'm going to put them in the oven. 1/2 teaspoon of oil, and honestly, just some shakes of the seasoning across the top of them, tossed them in it. I'm going to guess it's probably half a teaspoon of that. These are going back in the oven. And
just for 10 minutes at 400?
Yes. And I'm actually going to set a timer because I really do not want to overbake them. Meatballs are out of the oven. Chickpeas are in the oven. I'm going to make the orange harissa sauce and then a spinach tabbouleh as well. So I'm going to make the orange harissa sauce. Harissa would typically be with you would use a red pepper, reconstitute a chili pepper of some sort, a chili de la bowl perhaps. I would use some chipotle. I don't have either of those today. So I'm going to do the jalapeno and some tomato paste. So I should note that when I say this is a harissa sauce, it's a harissa-inspired sauce. Like most things that I do, I take what's traditionally, you know, those sort of components, and I make them fit what I like and what I want. So I'm looking at harissa as a red pepper sauce. This is my take on that sauce. Traditionally, you might find caraway in it. I don't do the caraway because I like the orange and the mint. But this is how I cook, using what I have and using the flavors I like, and putting it together in the way that I want to eat it. So I've got the 12 ounces of roasted red pepper, doing a whole jalapeno. I'm going to do 4 cloves of garlic, about a teaspoon and a half of cumin, teaspoon of smoked paprika, teaspoon and a half of salt, the juice of an orange, doing the half can of tomato paste. We're going to start with 4 mint leaves, fresh mint leaves. That's not typical for harissa sauce. The orange and mint are not typical. That's my fun spin on it. So I'm gonna puree this. So I'm tasting my sauce. The roasted red pepper is nice. I'd like a little more mint out of it. As it sits, more of that mint is going to come out of it, so I want to be careful that I don't add too much. It could use a little bit of salt and a little more acidity, so I'm going to add just a touch of red wine vinegar to it. So I'm going to add acid to it first because I know that it needs the acid, and I may find that I don't need salt. If I add the acid, that might be enough. And then if I find that that's not quite enough, then I'll add more salt. It's about probably a quarter of a teaspoon of red wine vinegar to start. I don't want the red wine vinegar flavor to take over, so I want to make sure I'm mindful of how much I'm putting in. I just want the acidity of it. Lemon juice would be another option that you could do if you didn't have red wine vinegar. I like the red wine vinegar with the roasted red pepper, so that's why I'm going that route, but you certainly could do lemon instead.
If you've heard Jackie B on our show before, you know she likes to taste as she goes, and she makes many adjustments. This time was no different. She added more orange juice, she added more salt, she tasted, and she tweaked.
So I've got my sauce at a place where I want it to sit. I'm going to put it in the fridge while I make all my other components, and then before I actually serve it, I'm going to test it again and see if there's anything it might need. If it might need a little bit more of that red wine vinegar, see how the mint comes out of it. It's going to be really bright, and we have to remember that this is going on to those ginger turkey meatballs, and that ginger is going to be really like, it's going to have a kick to it. So it's really meant to complement, and that ginger is going to be really great with this. The last component that I'm going to make for my bowl is a play on a spinach tabbouleh. I'm not gonna add grain to it. It's gonna be more like a spinach salad. So I'm gonna take fresh spinach, chop it up into sort of an herb. If you imagine like the size of a flat leaf parsley, unchopped, right? So that's what I'm chopping my spinach into. And then I'm gonna toss that with some salt and pepper, lemon juice, a little bit of garlic, and fresh cherry tomatoes that I've cut in half. Those are all gonna be put mixed up together and then go as a component to my bowl. The last two components to that are some roasted red onions and pickled carrots. I'm not making the pickled carrots. We certainly could because I love pickled carrots. We can do that sometime. Today I'm using Indiana Pickle Company's Upland Dragonfly pickled carrots. They are fantastic. They are so good. I always have them in my fridge. They're a great bowl component across the board. If I do a Mediterranean bowl, this is a Moroccan bowl. If I do a taco bowl, across the board, those pickled carrots are my go-to if I'm not pickling my own.
A Moroccan cauliflower rice bowl is assembled. It's beautiful. It looks great. The turmeric and the pomegranate and the cauliflower rice are a great juxtaposition of color. On top of that, the ground turkey ginger meatballs with the orange harissa, also bright and colorful. The spinach and tomato salad adding some freshness to it. Roasted red onions, the pickled carrots to really sort of pop on top of that bowl, and then the crunchy chickpeas to add some texture. We might dollop this off with a little bit of yogurt if we wanted to, add some mint to that if we want to get really crazy. Again, all of these components are fun if you want to just like play with some things. These are things that I mostly have around to be using, and so I'm going to throw them together and put them together in this way. I also can break all this out and do something else with it. That spinach salad can be, you know, added to some other salad. The chickpeas on their own can be a snack. Those meatballs are going to be a few other dishes in the future.
Thank you, Jackie. This is wonderful.
Thank you, Kate. Appreciate having you in my kitchen.
We've got a photo of Jackie's bright, colorful, Moroccan-inspired cauliflower rice bowl with turkey meatballs on our website. And as always, we have the recipe. You can search our recipe archive for old favorites and new inspirations at eartheats.org. Now, you might have noticed that Jackie's bowl had a lot of components. In part, that's because Jackie is meal prepping. She's making several sauces, several dishes featuring meatballs. She's probably got another place for those crispy chickpeas and the spinach salad. Also, because she might be enjoying similar meals throughout the week, she wants to build in opportunities to mix things up so she doesn't get bored with a single dish made the same way every time. But as Jackie noted, the beauty of a bowl is that you can make it your way. In fact, you could make this a vegetarian bowl or a vegan bowl. You could use rice or another grain instead of cauliflower. You could use tofu, falafel, or veggie meatballs. You can even adjust Jackie's harissa sauce and experiment with different toppings. You can make your dream bowl as simple or as elaborate as you wish. Jackie B. Howard tends to lean towards the elaborate. And can you blame her? That's all we have time for today. Thanks for tuning in to Earth Eats. Thanks also to the Earth Eats team, including Ayabon Binder, Chad Bouchard, Alex Chambers, Mark Chilla, Taylor Killow, Josephine McRobbie, Daniel Orr, Renee Reed, the IU Food Institute, and Harvest Public Media. Special thanks this week to Todd Kosmarek, Virginia Ferris, and everyone at the NC State Archives, and to Jackie B. Howard. Earth Eats theme music is composed by Aaron Toby and performed by Aaron and Matt Toby. Our executive producer is John Bailey. I'm Kate Young, and I produce the show. We'll be back next week. Production support comes from insurance agent Dan Williamson of Bill Rush Insurance, offering comprehensive auto, business, and home coverage in affiliation with Pekin Insurance. Beyond the expected. More at 812-336-6838. Elizabeth Rue, enrolled agent with Personal Financial Services, assisting businesses and individuals with tax preparation and planning for over 15 years. More at personalfinancialservices.net. And Bill Brown at Griffey Creek Studio, architectural design and consulting for residential, commercial, and community projects. Sustainable, energy-positive, and resilient design for a rapidly changing world. Bill at griffeycreek.studio.